Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. Right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson as we kick off this week. Memorial Day Monday. And Travis, I think it's only right to start off Memorial Day by thanking those who help make this country free and allow us to talk about sports every day of the week. We live in the greatest country in the world, hands down.
We do, and without them, we wouldn't have, you know, the opportunity to do what we do.
Yep, absolutely. So happy Memorial Day, and again, thank you. To those brave who make this the land of the free. Travis, we have a lot to get into today. The NBA Finals are set, and of course it's Memorial Day, and I think it's a fun time for Major League Baseball. At this point in time, you kind of know what a team is, and so we'll talk some baseball and we'll talk NBA. But first, the Finals are set. We know it's the Raptors and the Warriors. Your initial thought about what we have up and coming in the Finals?
Yeah, I'm a little bit shocked and stunned that Milwaukee lost four games in a row. I thought Milwaukee, if they got to the NBA Finals, had a golden opportunity to win the championship, and they lose four straight, and it came down to Toronto had a closer, Milwaukee didn't.
Yeah, well, I think that Mike Budenholzer was absolutely outcoached in this series. I don't think there was any doubt about that. If you take a look at the adjustments that Toronto made, really, to me, that was the bottom line. That was the difference maker. I mean, Milwaukee has some things they have to figure out going into the offseason, because the Raptors found a way, and Nick Nurse, I thought, did a terrific job of really neutralizing Giannis in games 3, 4, 5, and 6. And really, I mean, look, Giannis is a fantastic ball player. I don't believe he's the best player in the game. I think he's top 5. There's a big difference in going up against the likes of the Orlando Magic, the Detroit Pistons, the Philadelphia 76ers, and going up against the Toronto Raptors and an all-ball defender like Kawhi Leonard. There's a huge difference there, and we saw that in this series. And I've said for months, I felt like Kawhi Leonard was the best player in the NBA, and I think this proves it.
Yeah, Kawhi showing that he is the best player in the game. What a job he did to lead that team to the NBA Finals. Every time they needed a basket, Kawhi came through.
He did, in some form or another. Watching Game 6, when Serge Ibaka flew in at about the 9-minute mark, if I remember right, and had a putback dunk to tie the game, I knew it was over. The crowd erupted. It was a complete difference maker. I was watching the game with my father. I told my dad, I said, the game's over. He said, there's 9 minutes to play. I said, the game's over. That was the cincher right there. You also had a dunk from Kawhi. I believe it was right before that. So, I mean, the Raptors had a couple of plays that were just game changers. Milwaukee had their chances. If Milwaukee wins game five, they probably win this series. To me, it was that simple. Road team got a win. Whichever road team got a win first, I thought was going to win the series, and that's exactly what happened.
Man, I didn't think a road team would get a win in this series, and Toronto in that game five took control and got game five. And once Toronto got game five, you kind of felt like, well, they're going to win game six as well.
We'll talk more about the NBA Finals a little bit later on in the show. That's going to be the talk pretty much in the next couple of weeks. And then after that, we move right into the NBA draft. May/June is a huge month for the NBA. And the way things have kind of been pushed around, I should say. And we start the season so much earlier now in the middle of October. It's pushed out towards the middle of June. And then we have basically a week and a half, and then we go into the NBA draft, and then we go into free agency.
Free agency's moved up a couple days now?
Yeah, well, 24 hours.
Yeah, so
24 hours they moved it up.
They tamper anyway, so who cares?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's tampering going on.
We got to wait till midnight? You think all those deals get done by midnight?
No. This is the thing about NBA free agency that people don't get. I'm going to use the Lakers as an example. Why did the Lakers give Kentavious Caldwell-Pope essentially $30 million over the past two seasons? Why did they do that?
For LeBron James.
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, his agent is the same agent LeBron. So by giving KCP this amount of money, the Lakers can basically have contract negotiations with KCP. Look, this happens all the time in the NBA. Don't think that it doesn't. It does. And on top of everything else, players in the fraternity era, which you know I gripe about all the time, I hate this quote-unquote fraternity era of this league, they are in constant communication with one another because they're all friends now.
Yeah, they're all friends. They're all talking. I mean, Kyrie and LeBron had dinner the other day in Los Angeles, so I think they were talking just not basketball.
No, those guys were talking about Aladdin.
Yeah, Aladdin and what their barbecue plans are for the weekend.
You really think they were talking basketball? You really do?
No, not those two. Not at all.
Yeah, no, they're trying to smooth things over because it's setting up for a reunion for Kyrie and LeBron in Los Angeles is what it's setting up for.
Well, their styles of play, they mesh well together.
They do.
It's
they
just
do.
Their personalities don't mesh. And you got to work on that. And they've proved that they can win a championship together. And I think that's the healing process right there, you know, trying to figure things out for this upcoming season.
Well, let's step aside from the NBA. Let's move over to Major League Baseball. And like I said, Memorial Day is a fun day because you can kind of tell which teams are buyers, which teams are sellers. But we do have baseball all day long. Day baseball started this morning, and it's going to continue to move throughout the evening tonight. In fact, at 5:10, we'll have four more games on tap. Milwaukee will take on Minnesota. Gio Gonzalez has pitched very well. He's going to be on the mound tonight. Then we have Pittsburgh taking on Cincinnati. Mitch Keller going up against Sonny Gray. I know you're a big Reds guy. It's a big, big series for the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, they have a game going on currently, part one of the doubleheader, so this is part two. The Reds are 0-7 when they're trying to get to within three games, below 500. They got seven games this week, all at home against Pittsburgh and Washington. This is the time for the Reds to make a run.
We get the Dodgers and the Mets, and I love this pitching matchup. It doesn't get any better than this in the National League. Jacob deGrom will go up against Clayton Kershaw. Start time for this contest is set for 6 p.m. And then at 7:10 tonight in the nightcap, we get Texas at Seattle. Lance Lynn going up against Tommy Maloney. And so that's the Major League Baseball for the day. And again, I want to talk about this, buyers and sellers, because I think you can eliminate about half the field and where we're standing right now as far as Major League Baseball goes, because you take a look at the National League right now, and I can tell you in the National League West, two teams that are done, the Rockies and the Giants, they're done.
Not sure why people are high on the Rockies.
Well,
They
won the offseason as far as marquee free agent signings. Now, I agree with you. I didn't understand why people were so high on them, but think about this for a second. I want you to rank and take everything else out of consideration. I want you to rank this for me. Rank Bryce Harper, Nolan Arenado, and Manny Machado. Rank them for me. 1, 2, and 3.
I would take Bryce Harper as 1. I would take Nolan as 2 and Machado as 3.
See, I may take Nolan over both of them. I really may.
I like him, but I think Bryce is better than both those guys.
Okay, but regardless, you ranked him 2. Okay,
ranked him 2.
So the Rockies, if you take a look at their past, they have had a massive problem hanging on to their own talent. Be it Ubaldo Jimenez, who I know flamed out in Baltimore, but at the same time, Ubaldo was a star when the Rockies had to move on from
him. He was the face of their franchise.
He was. Take a look at Troy Tulowitzki. I remember Cal Ripken at one point in time saying that Troy Tulowitzki was the best shortstop in Major League Baseball. They had to get rid of Tulo. Right, the Rockies have
Cargo. Is he still around?
Yeah.
He's bounced around, I think.
Okay, that's a fair point as well. They brought him back on a one-year deal last season. But the point I'm trying to make is the Rockies have had a hard time hanging on to their talent. Okay, so you rank it Bryce, Arenado, and Machado. The Rockies got Arenado at $260 for 10 years. The Padres had to pay Machado $300 million over 10 years. And the Phillies gave Bryce Harper, what was his contract?
Was it $320?
Something over 14 or 13 years. So the point is, the Rockies won the sweepstakes when you take a look at it dollar for dollar, and they played quite well last season as well. I mean, they were one game away from winning the NL West for the very first time. Remember, they took the Dodgers to the play-in game. So I think people were riding that high. Did the Rockies improve their rotation? I thought they did. Here's the amazing statistic. The Rockies right now are below 500 at home.
That's a place where they're usually dominating, and on the road is their problem. And that's why they're struggling, because they're not playing well at home.
And if you take a look at the statistics for the Rockies, Nolan Arenado's batting .335 this season. He's been phenomenal. leads the team in home runs, leads the team in RBIs. I'm pretty positive he leads the team in OBP, and he leads the team in hits. Charlie Blackman, who has been phenomenal for the Rockies over the last few years, he's batting 300. Now he's on the IL again. You take a look at a kid like Ryan McMahon, who I know they had high expectations for. He's batting something like 250. Really, outside of Arenado, nobody else offensively, I guess Blackman, he's batting 300. You can't throw shade his way. But outside of that, I mean, it is a very lackluster squad. Chris Iannetta started off like a house on fire. He's really slow. Then you take a look at the pitching for the Rockies, and it's just not there. Jermaine Marquez, I mean, he's probably their best. He's been their best pitcher. Wade Davis, who you dished out a lot of money. I think they gave Davis like $55 million, if I'm not mistaken.
Gave him a lot of money, yeah.
Seven saves on the season, Travis. That's it. So the Rockies have their problems. I don't believe the Rockies can contend with the Dodgers. Well, I know they can't contend with the Dodgers, and I don't think they can contend with the Padres.
No, and that's why it was, you know, funny to me that people were, well, the Rockies are going to challenge the Dodgers. No. No one in the National League will challenge the Dodgers. That's what I said. They're not going to challenge them. The Dodgers are the best team in the National League, heads and tails.
No, well, nobody in the National League West, that's for sure.
No, and the Padres is the second, and they're not going to, you know, close that gap.
You move over to the NL Central, the Cubs and the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Pirates, even the Reds could make a move here. I mean, that's a very interesting division.
The Cubs need bullpen help. I mean, that series against the Reds, they lost two out of three. Their bullpen blew two games. And that's going to be the story all year with the Cubs.
It's an interesting division. I thought the National League East would be a little bit more competitive. You can write off the Marlins. I think you can write off the Nationals as well, which is a little bit disheartening because we were just talking about the pitching for the Rockies. If you dig into the Nationals, and you take a look at a rotation with Max Scherzer, who may be the best pitcher in the world. You can make that argument. Steven Strasburg, really Patrick Corbin, who's been great this season. How are they 22-31?
Offensively, they're not getting it done, and they're going to have to make a move at the manager spot. They probably should have never fired Dusty Baker.
Probably not. I mean, you take a look at the amount of runs scored. It's ranks in the bottom four, if I'm not mistaken, in the National League right now. Then you move over to the AL. The East, of course, entertaining as can be with the Yankees at the top. The Rays are starting to flounder a little bit, although they have won two straight. The Red Sox seem to be figuring it out. The Blue Jays are bad. The Orioles are horrible. You go to the Central, the Minnesota Twins, maybe the best story of the Major League Baseball season so far. They've won 9 out of 10. The Indians are right there. The White Sox, Tigers, and Royals, just cancel them out. Then you look at the AL West, excuse me.
The A's
have won 9 consecutive games.
They're doing it again. This time, though, last year they made a late run. Now it's, you know, early on in the season, and Oakland, again, trying to make a move for the postseason.
Yeah, so a lot of fun in the national or in the Major League Baseball ranks in general. We will talk about that a little bit later on the show. And I know you're a big hockey guy, so we got to throw this out there. Tonight, we have Game 1 of the Stanley Cup, St. Louis at Boston. The Blues, I talked about the Blues a little bit on Friday because they represent the second straight season where bookies and casinos could take a massive, massive hit. This team was 300-1. To get to the Stanley Cup. It was like the middle of the season they were 300-1.
So if you go back to January, the St. Louis Blues had the worst record in hockey. Dead last in the National Hockey League. Now they're in the Stanley Cup Championship.
You like their chances in this series?
I do. I like the way they're playing, but it's hard for me to go against the Bruins. So I will take the Bruins in 6.
You know, I'll say this. For as much as we talk about the NFL, St. Louis deserves it. You know, I've been hard on St. Louis as far as the whole thing that happened with the Rams.
You mean Boston hasn't suffered enough? That's only been 3 months.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right? Like, St. Louis deserves this. Boston,
I'm rooting for the Blues.
I am too. I'll root for the Blues because you lose an NFL team. You're on the hook for a stadium that's just sitting there. I guess to kind of try to heal the wound, you bring in the XFL. That's the best you can do with that horrible dome that sits in the middle of the city. The Cardinals aren't great. St. Louis deserves it. Boston, on the other hand, got a sour taste in my mouth with Boston right now. I don't need to see that. I don't need to see anyone from Boston win again.
No, Boston's had enough. So I'm rooting for the Blues, but I think the Bruins win in 6.
We've got a break for just a moment. Again, it's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Local sports recap is coming up. Plus, we'll talk more Major League Baseball when we return right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. While the 2019 spring sports season is officially over, there is still baseball to be played for both Carbon and Emory High School. Coming up on June 1st, there will be an All-Star game in Spanish Fork, and both Carbon and Emory will be well represented. Ford Carbon, seniors Ty Anderson, Colin Lewis, Anthony Jones, and Braxton Bennett will all participate in the contest. For Emory High School, they'll be Coda Alton, Kyson Stilson, and Cade Brazier. Again, the contest will be played Saturday, June 1st at Spanish Fork. That'll be next Saturday. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will have more on the upcoming All-Star Game for the 3A classification in the coming days. Utah State Eastern Athletics have made the announcement that student-athletes from the past 2018-2019 school year have attained a 3.28 GPA. That GPA was the average from both fall and spring semesters. USU Eastern Interim Athletic Director Scott Madsen said, quote, "I'm extremely pleased with the progress that the student-athletes have made this year academically. On average, USU Eastern student-athletes are required to complete 3 to 5 hours a week of study hall, depending on their course load and individual GPAs. At last month's USU Eastern's commencement, 38 student-athletes were members of the graduating class of 2019. There are 7 NJCAA-sanctioned sports that call USU Eastern home. Those sports are baseball, softball, men's basketball, women's basketball, volleyball, men's soccer, and women's soccer. Later this summer, the NJCAA will announce academic All-Americans and team awards, which should feature a handful of athletes from USU Eastern. For more on this story, make sure you visit CastleCountryRadio.com. Former San Francisco 49er and BYU running back Jamal Willis will bring his expertise to a camp on the campus of USU Eastern on June 8th. The camp will be a speed and agility-based training, and it is offered for kids ages 7 through 18. The camp will begin at 9 a.m. and it will run until 11 a.m. It's for boys and girls and all athletes of all sports. Recently, we were joined by USU Eastern assistant basketball coach Curtis Condi, who had a hand in putting the camp together, and he talked about the benefits for the youth.
We're bringing a former NFL player down to our campus on June 8th, a clinic, one for all athletes and then one for, you know, the skill position players that carry the ball in football. And that's for all ages. Jamal Willis, who played for the San Francisco 49ers. Some people will know him from his time in Provo. That's what he does, is he trains kids, and he's done very well. There's a lot of players from the University of Utah. There's a lot of players from BYU and Snow College that play football that train with him.
The cost to participate in the camp is $75. To register, call 801-427-3055. Again, that number is 801-427-3055. And we end by moving over to the national sports scene. The Utah Jazz have announced the schedule of daily doubleheaders for the Salt Lake City Summer League, which will be presented by the University of Utah Health and the Utah Sports Commission on July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at Vivint Smart Home Arena. The 6-game, 4-team Summer League showcase will be conducted in round-robin format, featuring the Utah Jazz, the San Antonio Spurs, the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Games will be held at 5 and 7 p.m. with the Jazz playing the nightcap of each session. You can get your complete schedule as well as information for ticket sales by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 7:50 a.m. It's a Memorial Day edition of the show. Let's preview the NBA Finals. I'm actually fairly excited for it. I know that in the minds of the diehards, you typically have to have compelling storylines to really get up for this. For instance, LeBron and Golden State, people loved it. People were down for it. The ratings were good. I don't know what the ratings are going to look like for Golden State and Toronto. I would assume they're going to be just fine, considering the Raptors have an entire country behind them, and the Warriors have had excellent ratings throughout the entire NBA season. But Travis, you and I were talking a bit off of the cuff, and I kind of sense that you're not too thrilled about this matchup.
No, I think it's going to be a short series. I think the Warriors are going to win this series in 5. I just don't see how Toronto can, you know, match up with the Warriors.
Well, Toronto does not have, well, Toronto has home court, I should say. And I don't think they have anything to lose.
No, and that might help them.
I think it is going to help them, and I think that it's time that we start considering the Raptors as a legitimate threat here to Golden State. I may be one of the very few that thinks we have an entertaining, interesting series here, and the reason I say that is because, again, I'm going to go back to it. Kawhi Leonard is the best player in the NBA, and without Kevin Durant, who is the best player on this Golden State team, I think things are interesting. Now, you and I did agree that Milwaukee was probably a little bit more of a issue.
A matchup problem for the Warriors, yes.
I agree with that. But at the same time, I'm not discrediting Toronto, because Milwaukee was the best team in the NBA all season long, and look what happened.
Beat them four straight,
beat them four straight games. So here's the question. What are you most looking forward to in the NBA Finals? And for me, it's Kawhi Leonard, because it's so interesting that we have a guy who was at the top of his game right now, was traded in the offseason because he hated the situation in San Antonio, and when you watch Kawhi Leonard, when you listen to him talk post-game, he is everything that San Antonio kind of goes by, right? He was the guy, in my mind. You couldn't draw up a better superstar to lead San Antonio than Kawhi. They deal him to Toronto. He goes to the freaking Raptors for DeMar DeRozan. Takes the Raptors to the NBA Finals. Kawhi Leonard's a Finals MVP. All right, this is a guy that's already been traded twice in his career, and he's on the verge of free agency. He may be playing for his third team in three seasons, and he's already been traded twice, and we're talking about him being the best player in the world, and he has a chance to lead the Raptors. He has the Raptors four wins away from an NBA championship. Think about that.
Yeah, and his short stint with Toronto, he might be the greatest Raptor of all time. I mean, behind, yeah, Vince Carter could be two. You could put Tracy McGrady three, whatever you want to say. If he closes this deal out and they win the championship, he is the greatest Toronto Raptor of all time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If he wins this series, you got to win this.
You got to win the championship, and he's the greatest Raptor. For me, it's going to be Serge Ibaka, because the Warriors really don't have any bigs to match him. You want to rely on Andrew Bogut? I mean, Serge Ibaka should dominate this series.
You bring Ibaka off the bench. Marc Gasol's done, I thought, a formidable job.
And he should too.
He should have some success. You remember the 17-5 game? 17-7-5. That's what he had in game, I believe it was game four. And we were just in awe over that, right? That's exactly what they needed.
That he's going to have to do that. He should be able to do that against the Warriors, where he spreads the floor. We know he can step back and knock the three down. So that can draw, you know, the Warriors' defense out, which means it opens it up more for Kawhi Leonard to, you know, drive and penetrate.
So let's see if Kawhi can wrap up what's been a pretty remarkable season already, okay? One of the most important things for the Raptors, and again, I don't think that we're stating anything that's not obvious here, it's the role players. You mentioned Ibaka, I mentioned Gasol, Fred VanVleet is a guy that, I don't even believe VanVleet was drafted, if I remember correctly.
Undrafted.
Kyle Lowry is playing in the NBA Finals, you have to feel good for him. He had his struggles early on in the postseason. So when you take a look at the role players for the Toronto Raptors, they have to develop some sort of consistency, because LeBron James, you can't even say he single-handedly beat the Golden State Warriors. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions in NBA history. And the NBA is full of misconceptions, such as Michael Jordan won six championships on his own. He didn't need a Robin. Now, he had Scottie Pippen, probably the greatest on-ball defender of all time.
He had Dennis Rodman, too.
Yeah, Dennis Rodman. He had Ron Harper. He had a team built around him. There's misconceptions about all-time greats. The misconception is that LeBron James beat Golden State by himself, and he did not.
No, he had help. He had Kyrie. He had Kevin Love. Those role players like Richard Jefferson, you know, Channing Frye, those type of players that you have to win championships.
Absolutely. And the only way Kawhi Leonard, the best player in the game, gets a win in this series is if the role players step up, and Danny Green has to be able to stretch the floor. Danny Green was not good in the series against Milwaukee.
Or the playoffs.
No, he hasn't been. He really hasn't. So I think he's shooting 19% from the field.
That ain't going to get done. And he's a guy, it's a catch and shoot from the three-point line, and when the opportunity comes, because he's going to get some looks, he's got to knock those down.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was 6 of 32 from the field against Milwaukee. 6 of 32, and somehow they found a way to win. And a lot of it had to do with Fred VanVleet. He replaced him. He was big. Kyle Lowry, he was big too. And so against the bigger Warriors, I think playing a smaller lineup with VanVleet and Lowry, it's not really going to work out. I think look at Portland. Portland found a way to develop three 17-point leads in that series against Golden State. They couldn't hang because physically they weren't on the same level as Golden State. Even without Kevin Durant, they just weren't. Dame Lillard, who I love, could not match up with Klay Thompson on the wing. CJ McCollum, who I love, could not match up with Draymond Green on the wing. They were overpowered. Okay, so how are the Raptors going to respond to Golden State being bigger than them on the wing? I think that's huge in this series.
Yeah, and I think they should take, you know, something from Houston, where Houston was kind of trapping Steph Curry. I think Toronto needs to try to trap Steph and get the ball out of his hands and make him work for a lot of his shots. If you can trap him and get rid of the ball out of his hands, I think that's a start. But like you said, they're so big on the wings that that's going to be a problem.
Okay, let me ask you this, and we're going to jump over to Golden State for a moment. They played a lot of extra basketball. And when I say they played a lot of extra basketball, we'll talk about Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry. They've gone to five straight NBA finals. That's a lot of extra
basketball.
It's
going to catch up.
And sometime it catches up to you. And I think at times in this postseason, it has caught up to them. Houston had every opportunity in the world to win that series. Portland had every opportunity to be up 3-1 in that series. They couldn't close the deal.
Clippers have played them the toughest.
Clippers played them extremely tough.
Out of the two series, three series, or whatever the case, the Clippers have played them the best.
Houston had them on the ropes.
Houston did, but
I never believed that the Clippers were going to win that series.
No.
When KD went down, I thought there was a chance Houston was going to win the series.
And Houston should have closed that game out, but they didn't.
They didn't, exactly. Looking at what Golden State may have coming back, Kevin Durant, one of the best players in the world right now, top three, no doubt, and or DeMarcus Cousins could return in this series. If you're Golden State and you're Steve Kerr, how do you add players like this on the fly, knowing that you reverted to your old style of play in the Western Conference Finals and it led to a sweep of Portland? That could be tricky. This may, in fact, be the most difficult position that Steve Kerr's ever been in as head coach of the Warriors, because Kevin Durant, for lack of a better term, is a ball stopper.
He is.
Okay, and that's not negative. I know whenever I use the term ball stopper, people immediately think of Carmelo Anthony, and it's a negative. The ball stops at some point in time with Kevin Durant because he takes 20 shots a game. Okay, the ball was not stopping in the Western Conference Finals. How do you implement that if you're Steve Kerr, and is it an issue at all?
I think it is an issue because the way they're playing now, they're back into their old ways before Kevin Durant got there. Now when he comes back, he's going to get his shots. He's going to do a lot of ISO one-on-one. He's going to take some shots away from those other guys. And it could affect the way that they play defensively if they're not getting their touches or not. It's hard for Steve Kerr to make that adjustment.
Look, I think that they're very beatable without Kevin Durant.
Yes.
I think in order for them to win this series handily, they have to have Kevin Durant. Here's a statistic. When they have Curry, Thompson, and Green on the floor during KD's absence, they have outscored their opponents by only 5 points over 100 possessions in over 440 minutes. That's not a whole lot.
It's not a lot. The margin is very thin for the Warriors without Kevin Durant.
So I think you have to have Durant. DeMarcus Cousins, DeMarcus Cousins in this situation.
Yeah.
It is nothing. It is. And it's a point that I have beat a million times, and you don't even have to be a basketball expert to understand this, Travis. The best rim protector on this Warrior team is?
Andrew Bogut.
I think it's Kevin Durant.
I would say Durant or Bogut.
Bogut's not even a shell of his former self. He's not. I mean, he knows the system, and he's a locker room guy that you want. But Kevin Durant can average 2 to 3 blocks a game if you let him float in the paint. Mm-hmm. That's what they're missing with him being on. And when I say float in the paint, think about this. Who's guarding the best player on the opposing team? It's Draymond and Klay.
Draymond and Klay.
It frees up Kevin Durant so often on the opposite side of the floor. Kawhi's going to be guarding Steph Curry. He's going to be guarding Kevin Durant. Without Durant out on the floor, do you put Kawhi on Curry? Do you put him on Klay? Where do you put Kawhi Leonard? Do you float him? How do you use him defensively? With Kevin Durant on the floor, you know where Kawhi's going to be. He's going to be covering KD. It's that simple.
Without KD, I think you stick him on Klay Thompson.
Klay, huh?
I would go Klay. I would take Klay out of the equation if I'm Toronto. Because Klay, I love Klay's game.
Me too.
I would stick him on Klay.
All right, so give me your prediction. How do you see the series ending?
I will take the Warriors in 5. Because I don't know. I don't think Durant's coming back at all.
You know, if Durant doesn't come back, this series goes 6. Minimum 6. It may go 7. And here's the thing you got to remember, Toronto has home court, and I think that will play a factor. Home court in Toronto, it reminds me so much.
And it's not 2-3-2 anymore.
It's not 2-3-2. You get 1, 2, 5, and 7. And if you watch the Raptors this postseason, it reminds me so much of Arco Arena in the early 2000s for the Sacramento Kings. It reminds me so much of the Delta Center for the Jazz in the late 90s. It is an insane crowd. You gotta remember, they're not playing in a city or a state that has one major professional sports franchise. They're not.
No, the Maple Leafs have been down, so they have all, you know, they got those hockey fans converted to basketball fans.
That place is insanely loud. It's insanely crazy. And to me, that gives Toronto two wins. Now, can they beat Golden State, Arco? Probably not. Probably not. If Toronto gets out of the first two games 1-1, it's going six. If they drop the first two games, the series is probably going to be over in four, maybe five at the most. But I have to believe that with that crowd, Toronto gets two wins.
I think Toronto gets game one.
I'm going to take Golden State in six. Would not be surprised if this series goes seven.
Yeah, I'll take Warriors in five.
Now, with that being said, part of me really wants Toronto to win this.
Yeah, I want the Raptors to win. I'm tired of the Warriors. I'm tired of the bandwagon Warrior fans. I'm tired of all that. I'm rooting for Toronto.
It's not even for parity in my mind. It's because look at the way this team has been built. They have pushed all the right buttons. And Usiri's got to get a lot of credit for this because this is a guy that went out, got Kawhi Leonard, risked a franchise player in DeMar DeRozan, not knowing if Kawhi was going to sign long-term. We still don't know if he's going to sign long-term. It's a guy that pulled a deal at the trade deadline and acquired Marc Gasol. It's a guy that went out and acquired the rights to Serge Ibaka when at the time the contract did not look great. Remember, Ibaka signed that massive deal leaving OKC and it didn't look great, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had signed the massive deal in OKC. They traded him, if I'm not mistaken, for Victor Oladipo. It just did not look great at that particular time. There's been things that this Raptors organization has done. I'm paying Kyle Lowry. This guy makes a lot of money. I wondered if you could win a championship based on the amount of money that you were paying Lowry. They're in the NBA Finals. Fred VanVleet was not drafted. Pascal Siakam is now a household name. People know who Pascal Siakam is. They have pushed all the right buttons. They've proven that a team that's not in a marquee market can push the right buttons, acquire players at the deadline, acquire players that are on big deals, and still put forth a winner. To me, Toronto is good for the league.
Toronto is good for the league. I'm with you. I agree totally.
That's kind of why I want to see the Raptors win.
Yeah.
We're going to break one last time. We'll come back and talk Major League Baseball when we return. It's a Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, and it's right here on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL, AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Drive Time Sports live from the Auto Forum Studios, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Jordan Buscarini alongside Travis Anderson. And Travis, we talked NBA. I want to talk Major League Baseball. I think Memorial Day is really the first solid point in the season. And we talked about this during the intro, where you can kind of look at teams and you know who should be buyers, you know who should be sellers. And I think you can kind of gauge who's going to be division winners, at least in some instances. Like when you look at the NL West, you know the Dodgers are going to win that division. When you take a look at the AL West, you know that the Astros are going to win that division. No disrespect to the Oakland A's. Those, in my mind, are the two best teams in baseball, the Astros and Dodgers. And I would be surprised, sitting here right now, I would be shocked if it wasn't the Dodgers and the Astros in the World Series. I would.
No, that was my prediction at the start of the year.
Yeah, mine too.
A rematch. Dodgers-Astros, yep. And I have the Dodgers winning in six games if we get to that point. But those are the two best teams in baseball by far.
Let's take a look at where teams are sitting right now. Is there a worse team in baseball than the Baltimore Orioles?
No.
Like if you had to watch a seven-game set between the Orioles and the Marlins, who you taking?
I would take the Marlins. Marlins in seven. Because it can't go any further than seven, so.
Oh, my goodness. That'd be terrible to watch, wouldn't it?
It would be one of the worst experiences as a sports fan, and you had to sit down and watch a seven-game series between those two.
I will tell you, based on my love for fantasy baseball, I have followed Baltimore acquiring Keon Broxton from the Mets, because Keon Broxton's a guy that can steal a lot of bases. And so you follow him. If you play in an NL-only fantasy league like I do, Keon Broxton's a guy that you would have tabs on because he's got speed. Problem is, he was batting like a buck 40 when the Mets decided to DFA him. Then he gets dealt over to Baltimore, and he's actually played quite well for the Orioles, which tells you how bad the Orioles are, right? Because the Mets are under 500. And here's a guy that was traded over to Baltimore. That team is so bad right now that the Orioles can actually use him in center field. But nonetheless, that's terrible baseball. But let's take a look at teams that should be sellers at the deadline, which really is not that far off. And we'll begin in the National League. The most compelling division still has got to be the Central, because I don't believe any team is out of it. In fact, right now the Reds are in last, and they're 6.5 out. If you take a look at the other divisions, the Giants are in last, they're 13.5 out. The Marlins are in last in the East, they're 13.5 out. For as bad as the Reds have played,
that 1-8 start really hampered their start, but their starting pitching has been much improved, and you're just waiting for that offense to click, and I think since Nick Senzel's came up, the offense has been much better.
If it wasn't for that 1-8 start, you could really, it's plausible that all five teams in this division could be 500 or better.
Yep, I agree.
If the Reds would not have gotten off to such a horrible start, and you mentioned Nick Senzel. There are really, in my mind, three guys that you should at least keep an eye on for the NL Rookie of the Year, and Senzel's one of them. And I'm glad that Senzel's finally getting some playing time, because we've heard about this guy for how many years have we been waiting for Senzel to come up?
Two or three injuries, and then the Reds sent him down, you know, for that extra year of eligibility he wasn't happy about. But Nick Senzel is a guy that's been in their system for a while. They've just been waiting, grooming, and he's up, and he's playing at the potential that he was drafted out of Tennessee.
Obviously, the other guy is one of the other guys, I should say, is Austin Riley for the Braves. He's been just phenomenal. And you didn't really know what was going to happen with Austin Riley, because here's a kid that was moving up the minor league ranks. He plays third base. That was his everyday position. And then the Braves go out and they sign Josh Donaldson to a one-year deal. And you have Camargo as well. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? You have someone like Austin Riley who is just shredding right now in the minors. What do? They put him in the outfield. He's moved up. And to me, Senzel and Austin Riley have been 1A and 1B as far as Rookie of the Year goes. But it's a true testament to just how talented the Braves farm system really has been over the last few years. And then you look within the same division as the Reds, and I think Brian Reynolds deserves some run as well in this conversation. A guy that's batting .319, he has five home runs on the season. He's been very good.
He's been really good. So the NL Central has some players, and like you said, Austin Riley of the Braves doing his thing. So that's a good time for, if you're a baseball fan, you like the young talent, to get involved and start watching it.
Now, I don't want to get too far off of the topic of talking about buyers and sellers now that we're at Memorial Day, but you mentioned it. If you're a fan of the young guys, baseball is changing in the sense where you no longer have guys hanging out in the minor leagues until they're 26, 27 years old, 25 years old. That was a pretty regular thing once upon a time. I mean, you have a guy like Juan Soto. He was a teenager last year. Ronald Acuna can finally drink beer, right? I think he just turned 21, if I'm not mistaken.
True.
And so you're seeing a new, of course a new era, but you're seeing a new thought process where guys do they don't have to hang out in the minors. I mean, look at the AL. Craig Biggio's son just came up, had his first home run, and you have Vlad Guerrero's son as well playing for the Blue Jays. Both are fairly young guys. I know Biggio's a little bit older. He actually went to college. I believe he graduated from Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken. It's just a different realm now, though. And you're seeing teams embrace the 19, 20-year-old kid, and it adds a different nuance to the way the game is played. It really does. I mean, Acuna has been unbelievable for the Braves.
He's fun to watch. So the Braves are set up nicely. A lot of young talent. And Atlanta's going to be a team that's going to compete for, you know, the next 5 or 6 years, maybe longer, because of those two young talents that they have there in their farm system.
Yeah, the way that farm system was set up, I mean, it's stellar. I mean, the Braves...
And the Padres are in the same boat. They
Padres
got a nice farm system.
They are. Now, again, going back to the original topic, buyers and sellers. if I was to tell you the Padres should be buyers and they should look to move on from some of this young talent to acquire maybe another arm, maybe another bat, what would you say to that?
No.
Because you don't think so.
I wouldn't, because I don't think that they're going to get to that spot even for a wild card opportunity. I would keep it and go into the offseason and go from that point.
I have a problem with that. And I think I'm trying to remember who the team was. You and I, it was the Brewers 2 years ago. I remember you and I.
Or was it last year when we were saying Milwaukee should make a move?
It was the year before, because the Brewers were right there in the division, remember? And it was a great story, but they were so young and they stayed pat. And then last year, we looked at that and said, wow, and I guess that was the right call. They didn't move on from anyone. They went out and they signed Lorenzo Cain in the offseason. They had a couple of big signings. Christian Yelich came aboard, and all of a sudden the Brewers, they became the Brewers, okay? So looking at the Padres, though, they have a ton of talent. They may have the best closer in the game right now as well with Kirby Yates. He's got 20 saves. Yates has been incredible. I don't think he's blown a save opportunity so far this season. You wouldn't move on from any of that talent right now.
Game and a half out of the wild card, 28-25. Do you think if they make a move that they are better than Milwaukee or Atlanta?
I think they can contend with Atlanta. There's so much young talent.
Because Arizona's tied with San Diego. Are they better than Arizona?
Yes.
So just if you want to go out and who's out there that's available if you're going to make a move? That's where we got to start with, I guess, pitching-wise.
I would look at Dallas Keuchel because you don't have to give up anything to get him.
Sign him, yeah. I don't.
What does Keuchel have left? I don't know, because there's a reason why he's still sitting out there.
He's waiting. He said he's waiting for the right opportunity. You can't pay the guy a lot of money, can you, at this point?
Yeah, he's going to want something long-term. At some point in time, he's going to have to simmer on that if he wants to play, because here we are on Memorial Day, and Dallas Keuchel still does not have a home. Okay, so you have to think about that. I think the Padres could pull off a wild card spot. I think they're an arm away, though. Now, I'm not saying give up the farm. I mean, they got so much young talent on this team. You have Tatis, you have Manuel Margot. I love Manuel Margot. Love the way this guy plays. Franchi Cordero has been on the IL pretty much the entire season. There's a lot of young talent, and there's a lot of talent in the outfield that I believe you could move on from and get a pitcher on an expiring contract. Is it worth it to go all in for a World Series run? Probably not, but at the same time, you're going to have to move on from some of this young talent eventually, because you build up that farm system. And at what point do you cash in assets? Because, Travis, I'm a firm believer that a prospect, how often do prospects hit, first off?
Not very often. I mean, it's...
Last year the Dodgers gave up five prospects to get Manny Machado. They went to the World Series. Was
it
worth it?
It almost paid off.
Yes.
Yeah, it was worth it.
It was worth it. Okay, go back... What was it, 2 years? It's almost 3 years ago.
I think teams hold on to their prospects longer than they should.
I think they value their prospects.
Because if you're not going to play them, you're just going to keep them in the minors, then you might as well move on and get what you need for that opportunity.
I think that teams value prospects too much. Okay, and I can go back to the Astros the year that they grabbed Justin Verlander. They do not win the World Series without Justin Verlander. They don't even get to the World Series without Justin Verlander. They don't get past the Yankees in a 7-game set without him. I can't even remember how many prospects they gave up. Was it worth it? It was worth it.
Yeah, and then you sign them long-term, and you have an opportunity once again to make another run at a World Series because of Justin Verlander. So, yeah. If you're the Padres, I guess the opportunity is there to move on from the prospects.
I think they should be buyers. Now, obviously, within that same division, the Giants need to be sellers. I don't know about the Rockies. I'm not going to say they should be sellers, but they should definitely be looking to improve the future of this franchise. The Diamondbacks, the Diamondbacks are in an odd spot. I don't think Arizona's that great of a team.
I don't either.
At what point in time do you move on from Zach Greinke? Because his value diminishes year by year. I think Zach Greinke's a guy you got to look at the trade deadline. We'll see where the Diamondbacks are right now. Because if I look at the NL, I don't believe they're better than the Padres. We know they're not better than the Dodgers. They're not better than the Cubs. I don't believe they're better than the Brewers. They're not better than the Phillies. They're not better than the Braves. Hell, I don't even know if they're actually better than the Cardinals. So at what point in time, if you're the Diamondbacks, do you look to move on from Zach Greinke?
I would move him. The first opportunity that a team called and offered me something worth it, I would move on from Zach Greinke.
I would too. I think you have to be sellers. The Nationals. At what point in time do you become sellers
now,
with Max Scherzer?
Today. Right now.
Would you move on from Max Scherzer?
I would. because we've already seen that Washington hasn't done anything with Max Scherzer. The team every year that we, you know, Washington's going to be that team that we have to look out for, and they've been a letdown. I would move on from him. I really would. If an opportunity from a team like the Dodgers or the Yankees or someone out there called, I'd listen.
Best player or best pitcher on this team right now is not Max Scherzer. It's Patrick Corbin.
Patrick Corbin.
I think that Corbin definitely benefits from having Scherzer and Strasburg in the lineup with him or in the rotation with him. But Corbin has been fantastic, and you signed him to a lot of money, and I thought it was the right move. If the Nationals feel, first off, they should have traded Bryce Harper last season.
Should have.
They should have gotten something for him. The writing was on the wall. Max Scherzer's 34 years old. He's not getting any younger. Right now, he's 2-5 with a 3.4 ERA.
The and whole team's a mess.
You know, I think it may be time to move on from Scherzer. It's weird to say that.
But at what point are you still going to stick with the same results? That Washington's not doing anything this year. They're not climbing out of that hole.
No, they're not.
You have to rebuild. You have to get younger. Max Scherzer's that piece to help you get younger.
Scherzer's going to be 35 next season. Yeah, I think it's something you have to consider if you're the Nationals. I really do.
Yankees, Dodgers are teams that we know have you know, the prospects and the money to make things work.
They're teams that we know would spend.
Yes.
We know this. We've seen it.
I think the Dodgers could use another pitcher.
I think the Astros could use another
pitcher. And the Astros.
Right? So, yeah, if you're the Nationals, you're in a situation right now where you have Strasburg and you have Patrick Corbin. Yeah, maybe so. I think Max Scherzer is going to be an interesting name. Scherzer and Greinke coming out of the National League. I would love to talk about the AL. Unfortunately, we spent too much time talking about the NL. We are out of time on the show today. Always a pleasure to be along with you. Have a happy and safe Memorial Day. Tomorrow we will be back. I know Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, will join us. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.